It's gonna be scary. Not for us.
All engine running. Liftoff.
To Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win of three. He got it! He got it!
This ain't my first rodeo.
Westbrook to the basket. Turns Schroeder around. Russell Westbrook.
House the three and the lead. You betcha.
Covington, biggest shot of the game, and he hits it. The corner.
PJ Tucker.
Gordon by
Gordon Ranch.
It's time to accomplish something together that we haven't accomplished before.
We both understand that we have one common goal, and that's to win a championship, so.
Let's get it.
What is up, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, and also the blog at ClutchCityCR. So first, I'd like to say I'm really excited at, you know, I don't know if it was just because I reinforced, hey, if you reach out to me on, you know, by doing the mailbag podcast review system, or if you DM me, but I've been getting a lot of DMs lately, a lot of messages, even on my Instagram, which is always funny because, you know, I don't use the Instagram for much Rocket stuff, but still, that's cool too, from a bunch of people, and a lot of people reaching out asking questions about the team, and that's what we're going to do today. Is I've got kind of an unofficial mailbag episode of sorts, but before we jump into those mailbag questions and tackling those topics, I do want to briefly, you know, touch on the Rockets head coaching search, and this is going to be how it goes, you know, as we're getting these little tidbits of information. You know, I'll probably spend a segment here and there, you know, because there's not enough to talk about a whole episode for just yet, not enough concrete evidence, but a couple things that I do want to talk about. First off, with the hashtag Make Houston Clutch Again movement that has been going around social media, thanks to Vernon Maxwell, of all people. You know, a number of former Rockets are backing Sam Cassell for the head coaching position here in Houston, and the hashtag Make Houston Clutch Again has been kind of floating around a little bit. And here's my thing. One, I think Cassell would be a phenomenal head coach. I think that he strikes me as a highly intelligent guy. He, you know, I like the connection of him being a guard and potentially being able to, you know, in ways, make the game a bit easier for James Harden and Russell Westbrook from that vantage point. Everybody that he's worked with, you know, throughout the Wizards organization, his time spent there as an assistant, as well as the Clippers organization alongside Doc Rivers, everybody has spoken so highly of him. You know, Doc Rivers going so far as saying that Sam Cassell should be a head coach right now. He's got an incredibly high basketball IQ and that he hopes he really gets a shot. Doc Rivers continues to say that he's paid every due that is possible and he's yet to get a job. So I'm hoping that that happens. And again, you know, Cassell's former teammates from the championship years here in Houston, you know, kind of backing him, Matt Bullard backing him on social media, Vernon Maxwell, Mario Elie, and myself included, because I took the picture that, you know, Bull put on Twitter the other day. It was kind of a throwback retro picture of Clyde, Sam, and Mario all helping Olajuwon up after probably, you know, a fall down, you know, defensively, offensively, whatever. And took that, kind of photoshopped it up a little bit and threw the line in there, Make Houston Clutch Again. So if you want to check that out, swing by my Twitter feed. I thought it turned out pretty cool, and it makes a pretty cool header on Twitter too. So there's that. But I'm behind the Sam Cassell push. However, there is a bit of other kind of, you know, information coming from Jonathan Fagan that kind of goes against the grain with the push to want Sam Cassell as the Rockets head coach. And so Jonathan Fagan going so far as saying that he believes that the Rockets are going to look for kind of a Mike D'Antoni clone, in a sense. And so this is a direct quote from Jonathan Fagan, you know, on Texas Sports Nation this past Sunday evening, talking about, you know, the head coaching search and what he believes is going to be the difference this time around. So he says, the big difference this time is that they liked the coach that they had. It's not, we need to be different, we need to fix this. They liked what they had. They were going to try and keep what they had. Daryl has always said he's not a believer in the opposite theory, where you hire a coach who is the opposite of what you had. What they are looking for, I think, is someone who forges the type of relationships that Mike D'Antoni did and can use them to be very demanding. He was close with the players. So my thing here is, why on earth, if they liked what they had, why on earth did it just seem like the writing was on the wall for Mike D'Antoni to be out of the organization? And why did they not even, because in the original report from Kelly Eco from The Athletic, Mike D'Antoni kind of blindsided Daryl Morey and the organization by saying, by him going to them and saying, hey, I'm out, I'm done, I'm not coming back. And Daryl Morey was, you know, admittedly a bit frustrated, but respected MDA's decision. So why on earth, if they liked what they had, why, A, were they not able to figure something out last summer? You know, the very abrasive contract discussions with Mike D'Antoni and Tillman Fertitta. And then past that, why did it take so long for them to reach out to him this time around? Why did they essentially let him walk this time? And they didn't, they weren't really able to get to the discussion table and try and talk things out. So I don't know if I completely buy into the fact that they, you know, wanted to run it back with MDA, because that's what, kind of the PR spin that's kind of coming out from, you know, the organization, is that they appreciated Mike D'Antoni, that they liked what they had with him, that they would have run it back with him. And it, on MDA's side, it doesn't seem that way at all. And I'm more inclined to believe the side of MDA, because the thoroughness in that report by Kelly Eco and Sam Amick over at The Athletic, that story had so much detail. And you know, I believe that was more than likely leaked directly to The Athletic, the events and how all that played out. So, but as far as getting a coaching clone, right, somebody who kind of fits that mold, that would point to a guy, you know, like, you know, the assistant coach from the Mavericks, Steven Silas, or potentially Alvin Gentry, you know, former head coach of the Pelicans, somebody with that offensive, you know, repertoire, as well as somebody who can, you know, forge those relationships, as Fagan said. Now, I don't see why Sam Cassell couldn't also be that kind of guy. He's not, it's not like you're bringing in a head coach like a Tom Thibodeau or a Jeff Van Gundy, who is completely the polar opposite of Mike D'Antoni historically, you know, somebody who wants a defensive minded style team, that kind of thing. But it's interesting. And I think there's so many solid candidates out there. Billy Donovan being hired for the Chicago Bulls head coaching position is already one down of the six vacancies across the NBA. So five more still to go, and the Rockets are still in that head coaching search. And it sounded like the Bulls had interviewed a lot of candidates. So I'm surprised still that we haven't had anything really leak out of the Rockets organization about who they're interviewing and what their process is, because they need to get a jump on finding a new head coach, because, again, there's a lot of other teams out there that are also searching for a head coach. And there's going to be some overlap in, you know, these potential assistants and lead assistants who would be on the, you know, next year's coaching staff that other teams are also going to be looking into. So I'm sure we'll start getting some more solid, concrete news here shortly, but I just wanted to provide that brief update and kind of touch base on that. And again, we'll do this consistently. Even if there's a tiny morsel of head coaching news, we're going to touch base on that, because that's the big story right now for the Rockets, because no other dominoes can really fall until that happens. We can discuss all the hypothetical trades we want every Tuesday, which we will still continue to do because that's fun. Everybody likes messing with trades. That's just how it works. But nothing else, no other dominoes can fall until the head coaching search is complete, because the new head coach needs to figure out which direction the organization is going in, what players they need, what personnel they need to be successful in whatever scheme they would like to institute. If it's the same as Mike D'Antoni's and we're sticking with small ball, cool. If it's different than Mike D'Antoni's and they need a legitimate big, they're going to have to go out and get one of those. So no other dominoes can fall until the head coaching position is filled. So with that, that's going to wrap up our first segment, kind of talking about the head coaching situation. I do want to hit these mailbag questions from a variety of people and a variety of different questions. So we'll get there in just one moment. And we're back here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. If you're not already doing so, do me a huge favor, do the show a huge favor, and do yourself a huge favor, and hit the subscribe button on the podcast, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. That way you get it as soon as possible, rather than having to wait for me to yell about it on Twitter or social media, whatever. So as promised, I want to get to these kind of mailbag questions, and I do thank you for reaching out and kind of providing these questions, because this is great. I love being able to try and answer these, and sometimes I'll just answer back with a if it's a quick question and I can provide a quick answer via DM, you know, on Twitter, then I just do that. But if it's, you know, a solid enough question that's got some depth to it, then I love to bring it to the show and be able to discuss it here. So without further ado, let's just dive right in. So this first question, more of a concern from Grant. So if the Rockets trade Eric Gordon, and he capitalized if. So if the Rockets trade Eric Gordon, then the Rockets need to make sure the one or two players that they get back can give us his 20-plus points per night. Otherwise, he thinks that they're in big trouble. I agree and I disagree a little bit. So I think that, yeah, anytime you trade a player, right, you need to look at what you're getting back as far as production. Now, that being said, it doesn't necessarily mean that the player that they trade Eric Gordon for needs to be a 20-plus points, or the pair of players, I should say, if it is two people that they receive back, which I don't think is as likely. I think if Eric Gordon gets shipped out, they're not bringing back multiple players. I think if Eric Gordon gets sent out, it's probably going to be one person coming back. So that being said, I don't think you necessarily have to look at it strictly in terms of scoring output, because let's face it, here's the thing with the Rockets, right, is they've got James Harden, who has led the NBA in scoring three seasons in a row. They've got Russell Westbrook, who, when healthy and when optimized in the system we saw, can easily be a 30-plus points per game scorer. And so you've got those two guys, the highest scoring duo in, what was it, 15-some-odd years, or the highest scoring duo ever in NBA history, averaging, you know, it was like 65 points a game or something. I don't have the stats pulled up right in front of me. But I don't think scoring necessarily needs to be the issue with whoever you get back in an Eric Gordon trade, as long as they're impacting the game in a variety of other ways. So maybe you trade Eric Gordon and you get back somebody who kind of shores up the defense a bit more, you know, provides some size, provides passing, provides, a more consistent shooting threat. Because let's face it, Eric Gordon's three-point shot was not consistent, and that was one of the biggest issues with him throughout the season. Even when he came back and he was healthy, finally, in the bubble, his three-point shot was still not there for some time, and that made it so difficult for him to get any type of a rhythm, because his driving ability was there, he was able to finish at the rim, even through contact, but he wasn't the shooter that he needed to be to flourish in this offense, because playing alongside Russ and playing alongside James Harden means that he's not going to have the ball in his hands the majority of the time. So I don't necessarily think that it needs to be somebody who gets back who can be a 20-plus points per game scorer, as long as they're impacting the game substantially in other areas, rebounding, passing, defense, like I said, those areas. So I understand the concern there, but the Rockets have plenty of players that can fill in, can get their buckets alongside James and Russ, who can kind of keep the offense chugging along, even in the absence of Eric Gordon. And whatever player they do bring in isn't going to be like somebody who just can't score, right? They're going to bring in somebody who is, a decent quality player. It just might not be a legitimate third 20-plus points per game scoring option. So I think the concern is warranted, but I don't think, depending on whatever the trade looks like, I think it's possible to get back somebody who isn't a scoring threat, but still impacts the game positively for the Rockets. So that's our first question. Next question we've got from at Lolo Jubril. I hope I said that right. And it was a two-part question, but I answered the first part via DM, and so I'm going to get this second part in here. Just kind of asking about Harden's mid-range numbers, and if it's viable for Harden to bring back the mid-range. And this is something that probably sits on the back of everybody's mind consistently in Red Nation is, you know, should Harden bring back the mid-range? That's a topic that gets brought up all the time. I've brought up this topic all the time, and the problem is there's not a lot of evidence that suggests that Harden is, you know, a potential elite mid-range shooter, similar to, say, Chris Paul, right? He's never had elite mid-range numbers. So going all the way back to his 2013-2014 season, I'm looking at the three seasons prior to MDA taking over. So looking back at this 2013-2014 season, he shot 43.5%, we'll say 44%, between 10 and 16 feet, and then from 16 feet out to the three-point line, he shot a hair under 43%. So we'll say 43% for that year. Then the next season, you go up one more year, and he actually takes a significant dip in the 16 feet to the three-point line area, and he's only shooting 34% from that range, still about 43% from 10 feet to 16 feet. And then one more year, the unfortunate 2015-2016 implosion season, where he shot, again, 43% from 10 to 16 feet, and then just 40% from 16 feet out to the three-point line. So there's not a lot of evidence there that Harden could be a necessarily elite mid-range shooter like Chris Paul or potentially like Kevin Durant. That being said, my argument has never been James Harden needs to shoot more mid-range because he's so good at the mid-range and he needs to prioritize it over the three ball. My argument has just been it would open things up a bit more for him to keep the defense honest so that they don't scheme to just drop their big all the way back to the rim. So there's situations like that, and we saw it against the Lakers in this very series where the Lakers were able to use Anthony Davis and drop him all the way back to the rim because they knew that Harden and everybody else on the team who's not named Russell Westbrook would not take those mid-range shots. And so that allowed the Lakers to run the Rockets off the three-point line and then put all the defensive pressure right there at the rim. And yeah, Harden was able to utilize his floater a little bit, but the Lakers also did a phenomenal job of those flash double teams and those late shot clock double teams making life hard for Harden. And he still put up incredible stats. But my hope is that moving forward, there is a way to somehow make life easier for James Harden. And I'll tackle one of these questions here coming up in just a moment because I have a thought that kind of builds on that point. But I want to drop in a quick word from our friends over at Built Bar. I want you to be as hype about protein bars as I am because, like, honestly, I used to not be a big protein bar guy. And then I found Built Bar. They've got so many amazing flavors. They've got a bunch of new ones that just came out with cookies and cream, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. They've got some of the OG flavors, the salted caramel, double chocolate mousse, my personal favorite, German chocolate. They're so good. They are basically candy bars that are jam-packed with protein. They are covered in 100% delicious chocolate. They're soft. They're easy to chew. They're great for the health conscious person. Whether you're trying to lose weight or just maintain weight, they are low cal, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. They are amazing for a keto diet, and you can check them out. Just go to builtbar.com and use promo code locked on, and you'll get $10 off. That's 10 bucks off your very next order. So use promo code locked on for 10 bucks off at builtbar.com. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for all things Houston Rockets basketball. Do me a favor to stay up to date with the show. Follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. Of course, follow the show at Locked On Rockets. And if you're interested, follow our blog over at Clutch City CR. So final segment here, final couple questions. And one of them is kind of a big one. But this first one, I want it because it kind of goes hand in hand with the question that I was just talking about with James Harden's mid-range game. So what did the, and this is from Trent on Instagram, which is weird, but still, that works. What did the 2017-2018 team do successfully that can be applied to the team now? And then a second question, would the team benefit from Harden moving off ball more and letting Russ be the primary ball handler? So I'm going to tackle that second one first because that's the one that goes hand in hand with what I was discussing. You don't really want to take the ball out of James Harden's hands just to put the ball in Russ's hands. However, that might be the only way to make life a little bit easier for Harden and to avoid those double teams. Because my biggest issue, and even Stan Van Gundy highlighted this, is what happens with James Harden is he can make all the right reads when these double teams come to hit him, right? He can make the right pass, he can, you know, make the right drive, you know, attempt the step back three, but when it comes to passing out of the double teams, as soon as the ball leaves James Harden's hands, all he does is stand near the half court margin as an outlet for the rest of the team. And it's up to the team to execute out of that potential 4-on-3 scenario, and if they don't, it's either a missed shot or it's a reset back to James Harden. I think there could be more to the Rockets offense than that. And I struggle to see, again, with Mike D'Antoni, who is supposed to be an offensive genius head coach, how there isn't more done. Because at the end of the day, if your best player is simply being taken out of the game because of double teams at near the half court margin, then there's something else needs to happen. And the only thing in my mind that makes sense to do that is to have Harden operate off ball a little bit more, right? He doesn't need to be Steph Curry. He doesn't need to run around a million screens a game. He doesn't need to run around setting a million screens a game, but having him operate a bit off ball, have some more dribble handoff happening, get him going downhill before the defense has a chance to double team him could potentially make life a bit easier for Harden. So while I don't necessarily like the idea of taking the ball out of James Harden's hands and putting it into Russ's hands, I like the idea if it means Harden has an easier time going up against defenses that are bound to double team him. And that's what we saw all throughout the Lakers series, and they did a hell of a job to doing it. Throughout the regular season, you're not going to see that as much because regular season games are not nearly as crucial as postseason games. So when it comes to the postseason, if this is a defense that we're going to consistently see used against James Harden, there needs to be a counter to it. And the counter can't simply be he passes the ball out of his hands, great, he made the right read. And then if the shot doesn't fall, the shot doesn't fall. If the rest of the team can't create, they're essentially completely removing James Harden from the game. And I don't think that's an acceptable version of offense to just be content with your best player not having a role in the offense. I get it that he's generating a 4-on-3 possession and that the team should be able to score based out of that. But it doesn't always happen that way. And I'd feel much more comfortable if he was more involved in the offense. And again, I think the only way to do that is to take the ball out of his hands a little bit, have him operate off ball a little bit more, which means Russ is going to handle it a bit more. So that's that first answer. And then that, the first part of his question, of Trent's question, what did the 2017-2018 team do successfully that can be applied to the team now? I don't know if it's necessarily something that can be just applied a methodology or a philosophy from that team, but that team's personnel was just different than this team. That team had elite plus level defenders all surrounding James Harden. And, the only guy who really wasn't a plus defender and who was in fact a negative defender was Ryan Anderson, who was phased out of the rotation going into the playoffs. So by the time the playoffs rolled around, the reason the Rockets were such a juggernaut to, for the back half of that season is because they phased Ryan Anderson out and they kind of slotted PJ Tucker into that starting spot. So you had all plus defenders, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, all surrounding James Harden, Luka Mbamute. And Gerald Green, not a plus defender, but he was used in spurts, similarly to how I've championed Ben McLemore should be used on this team in spurts, where you don't leave him out there for considerable heavy minutes, but you plug him in, give him 5-10 minutes a night, just try and fill up the basket, a few possessions here and there, run some set plays for him. And that's exactly how Gerald Green was utilized. So everywhere, everywhere on that team had a plus defender surrounding James Harden. And even Harden wasn't a negative defender. He was just kind of a neutral. And so that team was not only the best offensive rated team in the NBA that year, they were a top seven defense. They were the seventh best defensive team in the year, or in the NBA that season. So they were elite on both sides of the basketball. That team had the ability to win games defensively and not just by, dropping an avalanche of threes on the opposing team and winning strictly through offense. And we saw shades of that this season. We saw shades of this Rockets team being a defensive team, being able to lock down teams on the defensive side of the ball while their offense kind of struggled at times. So I think that the blueprint is very clear in getting defensive-minded 3-and-D guys surrounding James Harden. Now, the issue therein lies Russell Westbrook is not one of those guys. Russell Westbrook is not Chris Paul defensively. He still brings a lot to the table. And he's still, on ball, solid defender, but he does get caught sleeping a little bit occasionally, similarly to how James Harden used to. And I think we saw a different mentality from James Harden regarding defense going into the Disney bubble. And I'd like to see that same mentality kind of seep over to Russell Westbrook starting next season, because if you can get Russell Westbrook to be a passable defender, as long as he's not a net negative, and then you've got Harden plus defender, Gordon plus defender, House plus defender, Tucker plus defender, you're kind of mimicking that team a little bit from 2017-2018, where you're going to have one guy who's playing heavy minutes that is at least a neutral defender in Russell Westbrook, and then you surround that guy with plus defenders across the board. Now, that's not saying that James Harden is, to the level of elite defense that Chris Paul is, but James Harden has proven that he is a plus defender at this point in his career. He is no longer a negative defender or simply a neutral defender. So I think the blueprint is clear. You surround Russ with, a bunch of guys who are good defenders, and the blueprint can be similar to that 2017-2018 team where at all times you've got three or four plus defenders on the court, and you've got the one or two guys that are not plus defenders, but they're also not breaking your back defensively by, giving up easy buckets left and right. Last question here, and this is kind of a big one, and I read it wrong at first because I read it as, do you think trading CP3 was a mistake, and then I had to reread it because from Kazim, it's actually, do you think trading for CP3 was a mistake? And so this goes all the way back to, you know, the Rockets, you know, instigating the trade for Chris Paul from the Los Angeles Clippers. And it's always interesting looking at like butterfly effect scenarios like this, right? Trying to figure out, okay, where did they go wrong? Where could they have done things a little bit differently? And I think you look at that trade, and even Daryl Morey has a little bit of regret from that trade, having to throw in Montrezl Harrell at the last minute. Because if you think about what that 2017-2018 team would have looked like had they not only had Clint Capella in the middle, but then Montrezl Harrell coming off the bench as that, you know, high energy, high intensity motor for rebounding and for, you know, offensive, you know, purposes, being able to catch lobs from James Harden and Chris Paul, just like Clint Capella was doing, would have been incredible. I don't think trading for CP3 was a mistake. Even if it's, you know, you trace all the steps back and now the Rockets have Chris Paul and they're out, you know, a gigantic cache of draft picks, I don't think trading for CP3 was a mistake. The team was easily one of the most competitive teams in Rockets history, you know, posted a franchise best 65 wins. And even though they had to give up a lot to get to that point, that's what you have to do for star players. And even though Chris Paul was a little bit past his prime at that point, it made sense. And Chris Paul was, at that point, the best teammate that James Harden had ever been paired up with. So you gave James Harden finally a superstar teammate. And even though there was a drop-off from, you know, the 2018 season to the 2019 season, Chris Paul and James Harden that first year, you saw what was capable when Harden had a superstar alongside him that, you know, meshed really well and that complemented him. And we're seeing the differences now in a superstar in Russell Westbrook who doesn't complement James Harden. And there are some growing pains there and there are some struggles. But I still am of the belief that talent at the end of the day trumps fit. And yes, you can argue Chris Paul is a better fit for the Rockets. You can even argue Chris Paul is more talented than Russell Westbrook is with his skill set, with his shooting, with his basketball IQ, with his passing, all of that, right? You can make that argument. And I'm not trying to piss off the Russ stands. But I do still think Russell Westbrook is an incredibly talented individual, and he and James Harden can make this situation work. So I don't think that trading for CP3 was a mistake. I think it's hard to look back on that and say, because look, if Chris Paul's hamstring doesn't go out and the Rockets become NBA champions that 2018 season, then none of this matters, and everything that had been done up to that point is, you know, vindicated, you know, Mike D'Antoni's offensive philosophy, Chris Paul's storied career, James Harden doesn't get any more flack for not being an NBA champion. All of that stuff changes. And then you play butterfly effect, you know, potentially maybe they're running it back for a second championship the next year because then they re-sign Trevor Ariza. They bring in potentially some veteran free agents who want to ride, you know, the coattails of James Harden and Chris Paul's success. So it sucks that they came so painfully close to a title and just weren't able to pull it off. But at the end of the day, I would not undo that trade. I don't think trading for CP3 was a mistake, even with all the assets that they gave up. So that's going to do it for today's episode. I really appreciate all those questions. I think it's really fun to discuss things like that and kind of a variety of different topics. But as always, thank you so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.